enjoy a good squeeze.
Hello, 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 and welcome to A Good Squeeze. I'm August.
And I'm Margo.
And we are back again exploring the world of 007.
That's right, squeezing a little James Bond into our lives.
And this week we were feeling a little Roger Moore action.
We missed him.
Yes, and you know, like we've said in the past, we're not going chronologically. Mm-hmm. We're not going in the way of the movies or the books. We're just going by how we feel, what mood we're in. Who you want to watch this week? Roger Moore? Okay.
That's right. We're kind of just filling the voids if we're like, we really miss, you know, Johnny Boy. Who's Johnny? I don't think there's been a single... Oh, no, his name's James Bond, not John Bond.
That's his brother.
That's his brother. He's the accountant.
So, yeah, this week we're taking a journey to Thailand, and we're watching The Man with the Golden Gun.
That's right. What a watch.
What a watch, indeed. And, you know, I just mentioned we're not going chronologically, but one would think, hey, if you're in the mood for a Roger Moore, why wouldn't you just start with Live and Let Die?
What's the logic behind that?
It was his first outing.
Oh, wow. We'll get to that. Yeah. We'll unpack that.
Yes, and if you've been following us, you know, we haven't covered Live and Let Die on the show. We will soon enough, but yeah, we tried Live and Let Die with Margo, and it was a little spicy. So.
It was spicy, and it just was not the Roger Moore for me. It really, for me, was... right off the bat, I was like, I don't like Roger Moore.
Yeah.
I don't like Roger Moore. We watched The Man with the Golden Gun, and I can say I like Roger Moore.
Yeah, it's been a
big revelation.
It's been a growing journey for you and Roger Moore, whether it's like, you know, hearing behind the scenes stuff or watching clips from some of the other movies or even sitting you down and having you watch a few movies. Roger Moore, you would have said, was your least favorite Bond.
To this day.
Yeah. Oh, he still is?
Yep.
Still is? Oh, okay.
I have a bad relationship with Roger Moore. Him and I personally, we have a lot of beef. Here's the thing. It's not warranted. It's unhealthy. And it's like, I tend to, it's almost like, you know, when you don't like a coworker and you have good reason for it, but you want more of a bad reason. So you start making things up about them. That's what I do with Roger Moore.
Yeah.
And that's you were a witness to that when I was talking about his introduction, you know, with the barrel
and the gun barrel.
And I used to say that his shot was the most over exaggerated one out of all of them. Like, if like his arm would go up and he would jump into it, and that's not true at all, but I just convinced myself that was the truth. I would tell people that and people would believe me. I was literally on this like active anti-Roger campaign that like no one asked, but I would just berate this man for no reason.
Yeah.
Other than just like I didn't like Live and Let Die, and I don't like the way he kisses. We'll get to that. But
you know, that's a fair point.
It's a fair point, but it's not enough reason to hate the man. You know?
Unless he kissed you like
that. Yeah, that's right.
Like, ooh, Marga, you taste like butterscotch.
Why do you taste like parsley? As I have like parsley hanging on my mouth.
Why parsley?
I don't know. It's good. I like parsley.
Would you describe Roger Moore's kissing like a fish or a vacuum cleaner?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say like when you're about to brush your teeth, like when you're about to put the toothbrush in your mouth, you know, your mouth isn't open all the way. You're like making just enough room for the brush. I don't know how other people brush their teeth, but that's how I brush my teeth. He kisses like I brush my teeth for the first 2 seconds of me brushing my teeth. And then, you know, then I brush my teeth and he kisses. Two different things, but the initial approach, very similar.
Yes.
So every time I look at myself in the mirror, I'm like, no, don't do that, because I look like him, so.
Anyway. The man with the golden gun.
I wanted to start with my beef with Roger Moore, just to give some context that if I am really hard on him for this movie, there's context.
It's just because you expect better.
Yeah, no. really high standards.
I give you a hard time. It's only because I know your potential.
It's just because you're disappointing me.
And you know, let's start with that. Some like quick factoids about this film. It was Roger Moore's second outing as James Bond. It was almost the last James Bond movie. It really was. This movie was not successful. And they were struggling as a franchise a little bit. You know, after Sean Connery left, they brought in George Lazenby. And the movie did all right at the time. But at that point, it was still the least successful Bond film. And then Live and Let Die came out. It did fairly well, but a lot of buzz of that was for the new Bond actor. This one, they pumped out really quick. Like within a year of the previous film coming out, they wrote, filmed, and made this one. And there were a lot of financial woes, a lot of production delays and issues. And not to say it was the movie that almost never was, but there were a lot of struggles. There were a lot of money being spent when it shouldn't have. So financially, they're struggling a bit. And then the movie did not do well. It was the least successful Bond film at that point.
I'm not surprised. I am, like, I guess from an outsider perspective, I'm not surprised from, like, knowing how important... Okay, do you want me closer to the mic or further away from the mic you've given me?
Well, when you're talking louder, I want you to sit back. When you're talking quieter, like so you are, like lean forward.
Coaster, I'm like, yeah! There we go. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Glad we figured that out. From knowing how the insiders work, like the Bond nostalgics, I'm surprised about that. Yeah, to me, this was such a James Bond movie. Mm. Like, you had all the tropes. Mm-hmm. You had, like, the not sexy bad guy, because he, you know. Well. But he does have three nipples. So
kinky.
It was so funny how they just kind of, you know, in the opening scene when he's, like, with Nick Knack, who, I mean, you know, spicy, right there. But, you know, he's, like, laying down or something, and then the camera just like zooms in on the nipples. You're like, whoa, give me some kind of heads up here. I don't know how they would give you a heads up, but like a little subtlety. Now, you know, if someone has three nipples and they have their shirt off, I can tell from like 20 feet away, you know, or that's not a long distance. I wear glasses, so for me, that's a long distance. But you can tell, like, even if you walk in a room, somebody has three nipples, you're like, Everybody has their shirt on. You're like, someone has three nipples in here. So
you've convinced me that, yes, he is a sexy bad guy.
Yeah, he is.
So one trope down. What are the other tropes this movie has?
Bond being a little rough with women.
Yeah, you know, like, upon this watching, and I know at the time they were trying to figure out Roger Moore's vibe mm-hmm. as James Bond. And the director, Guy Hamilton, he wanted to toughen him up a bit more. He wanted it more Sean Connery-esque, and it just doesn't work with this, with Roger Moore. He's too much of a gentleman, you know what I mean, to, like, give off the brute vibe. Now, if Sean Connery was, you know, twisting some girl's arm for information, like, yeah, I'd buy that. But Roger Moore's take on Bond doing it,
it seems deceptive. It seems like he's like, hey, how's it going? Don't worry, you have nothing to fear. And you're like, oh my God. It feels uncomfortable. It feels dominating in the wrong ways.
Yeah. And, you know, this was Roger Moore's second outing. I have partaken in all of them. You've seen, you know, clips and other films. Mm-hmm. Looking back on this movie, Roger Moore's Bond, he would not smack up a woman for information. He would seduce her, charm her.
It worked so much more whenever there was the points of seduction. And even the little funny bits that they added, like with the belly dancer, mm-hmm. and he accidentally swallowed. First off, that wasn't her belly button. That's kind of gross.
Imagine how he felt.
You know what? Maybe he's into that. And you know what? Not here to shame anyone. If you're into like belly button scum, no worries, man.
I don't think he was. He was quick to get to that pharmacy.
Yeah,
he was like,
yeah, that's right. He just sucked it right up.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, you know, it was like that got a laugh from me. Like I was like, haha, he swallowed it. But then also then it did set in for me that it was like essentially shrapnel that went down his esophagus. He probably had a lot of internal bleeding in that moment.
Maybe. I wonder how he got it out.
We really need to talk about the internal bleeding. This is a really important topic.
But, yeah. And, you know, but on that point, I think that could have done or been part of the reason why this movie didn't do so well. Maybe some of those scenes just did not sit well with viewers at the time and just didn't get that buzz, that I'm thinking of Scaramanga. like rewatchability, like re-ticket sales is what I was trying to say, you know.
When did it come out?
1974. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I actually really like this film. Mm-hmm. I'm very, very nostalgic for it. I would even go as far to say it's my third favorite of the Roger Moore films, personally. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I even consider it my second favorite, to be honest.
What is it about it?
A lot of it has to do with... I like the zaniness of it. I like the world log of it, like where we go. We get to check out Thailand and a couple mm-hmm. other... It's the locations in particular, the settings that I really like. One of which, like, you know, the boat that is like a shipwrecked boat that they have mm-hmm. MI6 office within. I love that. I love Scaramanga's island lair.
I was going to say the third trope movie was like awesome lairs, like super cool undercover stuff and that. So I'm happy you're bringing that up because that was really cool.
The fun house. Like the booby trapped funhouse mm-hmm. / island home, like awesome. And great villain. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the strongest plot of said villain, but he has a character and even a background. Very, very cool.
I like that he's not smarter than Bond, but he is like, he studies Bond. Like he knows Bond.
He's the antithesis of Bond. They're almost meant out to be like equals, but on different spectrums, you know? That. So we both have like, if we had the same skills, if we were the same person, but we just went and you went the good way, I went the bad way kind of thing.
I like that.
That's how they're kind of presented.
Also, Christopher Lee makes Roger Moore look like he's 5'4".
He makes everyone look that short.
That man is so tall. I forget how tall he is. Yeah. It's just so funny. Like at the end scene with the duel, not to skip ahead, but... You see them back to back. I'm like, they shouldn't have done that. They shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, it makes more intimidating. Yeah, I think they should have done Scaramanga and Knick Knack side by side more often. Really show it off.
That's so bad.
But you know, like something, because you touched on the end and I'm touching on the beginning, something I found really strong personally was the opening. It is a Bondless opening. And mm-hmm. up to this point, Roger Moore has done two of those in a row, which is interesting. But anyway, it's the fun house. So Knick Knack does a deal with these assassins to kill Scaramanga. Why would, you know, Scaramanga's butler do this? Because they have a deal worked out that if Scaramanga were to die, then Knick Knack would inherit everything. But he also does it as a point of sharpening his skills, sharpening Scaramanga's abilities.
It's twisted and so effective. I really like
it's fun. It's fun.
And it's funny you say it's fun for me. It's absolutely terrifying. I do have a funhouse story personal, but we'll get to that in a second.
And you know, you have this whole opening and you get to see all these different areas. Some things are a little cheesy, mm-hmm. like, you know, a blinking animatronic. So it's like not really an animatronic, maybe. You know, that's one of those deals production wise. I was like, why do they have an actual actor doing that? Why couldn't they have, like, just had, like, a dummy? Like,
okay, so
a
those statue? Were real people.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
or at
what
least
I thought.
The gangsters were.
Because I thought that, and I was like, nah, they got to be props. Because they got real... I don't know, the production value was really cool.
Yeah, in so certain convinced. Areas, certainly.
I was convinced it was a real person. It was a real person, but,
yeah,
you know.
Oh, there you go. They did their job. Wow, that animatronic blinks and flinches.
It scratches its nose when the camera's not looking in the...
Yeah. But yes, Scaramanga gets his golden gun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's such a marksman. One shot kills the assassin. And then you get revealed, oh, there's a statue of Bond in this funhouse. So, you know, he's got his sights set on 007. I like that opening. And then the finale takes place in that same spot. So you know what Scaramanga's capable of. You know what Knick Knack's capable of. You know what the environment is. Bond doesn't. And I find that very exciting.
And it's really cool that, like, Knick Knack's relationship with Scaramanga, I'm glad you previously brought this up. It's not a matter of loyalty. It's a matter of, like, control and manipulation between those two. Because, mm-hmm. Like you said, it is like, oh, if I die, you inherit this whole thing. But it's like... So it's motivation to try to get him killed, but it's also only going to help Scaramanga because then he gets to build on his skills, just like he said.
Right.
But then at the end, when Nick-Nack is going to go kill Bond, I don't understand that.
Yeah.
I
always took that as he's getting revenge because, yes, Nick-Nack inherited everything because Scaramanga was killed. But also, Bond blew up the whole damn island. So.
Oh my god, of course. Sorry, revelation.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, so he literally took everything from him.
Yeah, so he's pissed. And then he took the boat, too. And he's like, get back here. I'll kill you. But yeah.
Such a cruel treatment at the end. I mean, yeah, Nick-Nack did, like, it was an accessory to a lot of murders, but, like,
sure.
Putting him in a cage at the top of a sail post or whatever you want to call that. That was just a little, it made me uncomfortable watching that. I was like, ugh. Yeah. I don't think that's okay.
So where does Nick-Nack rank for you as far as like henchmen? Because, you know, a few episodes ago I was talking like my top favorites. I forgot to mention Nick-Nack. He's up there for me.
I mean, the fact that he speaks French already, just the way he says Scaramanga, I'm like, oh, that's good. That's a sound. That's
right away, Monsieur Scaramanga.
Vovo, Monsieur Scaramanga. I don't even know what he says, but like, yeah, it's cool. I think he's really convincing. He's really effective. He's just a good actor. He didn't gimmick it, which I appreciate. I mean, it is a gimmick. It's unfortunate that, you know, a lot of, little people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are always 90% of the time like cast as like these like silly gimmicky roles, and this is definitely one of them. But with Nick-Nack, I feel like you could have gotten someone who wasn't a little person. Like it would have still worked.
Yeah,
and I just think he was just a really good henchman. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't gimmicky. It wasn't like crazy little people jokes left and right. Like yeah, there were a few because it was the 70s, but I thought it was really effective. He's like his stare, like the way he like was about to, what was it when he was dressed up as the statue and then he was literally about to like harpoon Bond. Like, and then the guy was like, not here, you're going to make a mess, essentially. Mm-hmm. And he was like so mad. He was like, God damn it. And he like threw the spear and it, like, went in the ground. Like, I thought, like, yeah, I could see him do that. Like, it was just, he was really good. I can't now, I don't have enough of a repertoire of henchman to rank him yet. I really liked him, but what about you though? Because
we'll save that for an episode down the line, you know, favorite hench characters. But
ooh, I like that.
Oh no, always have really liked him. There was a game on the GameCube called 007 Nightfire, and you could play as Nick-Nack, and he was, you know, it was almost like an advantage if you played as Nick-Nack because he was shorter than the other characters, so your default, you know, where your gun is pointing is like at a certain level. But if Nick-Nack was around, you'd have to like, you know, aim down.
Oh, that's crazy.
The same thing was for Oddjob in the GoldenEye video game.
Mm-hmm.
Oddjob was a lot shorter than the other characters. I don't know why, because in the movie, he's pretty huge. So I don't know why they made him so short in the video game, but that was the advantage of being Oddjob. He was shorter. But yeah, being able to play as Nick-Nack in this video game was always fun.
That's cool.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. The Golden Gun, though. The Golden Gun, for me, nostalgically speaking, my introduction to it, like, for a while, I had this, like, legendary lore of the Golden Gun. I remember, I've mentioned a million times, my intro to Bond was playing the GoldenEye video game on Nintendo 64. You know, I was, like, 6, 7 years old playing this game for the first time. And I would go to a friend's house and play, and he had an older brother, and we were playing this multiplayer game, and I would just, you know, die like that, like boom, just all of a sudden dead. And, you know, it's the kind of game where you shoot each other and it takes a lot of shots, and eventually your life gets depleted and you kill your opponent, and whoever gets the most kills wins. Well, we're playing this round like we had always done, and I just instantly am dying. And I was getting so frustrated as a 6, 7 year old, like, what is going on? It's because we were playing Golden Gun mode. And Golden Gun mode, somewhere on this map, was the Golden Gun. If you got it, you could shoot your opponent. It's a one-shot kill.
Ooh.
I didn't understand that as a kid.
Yeah, and as we all know, 6, 7 year olds have excellent temper control. You know?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure I threw and bit the controller. Yeah, so from that point on, I'm like, oh, the Golden Gun, like, it's super powerful. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it? And I remember finally seeing it and getting it and being like, this thing looks silly. This doesn't look like a gun.
It looks like it could be taken apart. Like, and yeah. It does, you know. So,
as a 7-year-old, I'm like, this is not a gun. This looks like a cigarette holder, a lighter, and a pen.
It looks like cufflinks. Looks like if you pull the... Yeah, that's great. So it looks like if you pull the trigger, there's just going to be a little flag that pops out that says bang.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've always, like, known of this movie and hadn't had the chance to see it. This was one of those ones I caught on, you know, the 15 days of 007. And It was, like, on at 9. And, you know, my dad let me stay up late so we could watch it kind of thing. And, you know, being this young at that point in time, my favorite movie was always the last movie I saw. So for a while, The Man with the Golden Gun was my favorite Bond film. And even my younger brother, who's a big Bond fan too, he, I think he would say this is his second favorite Bond film of all of them.
Wow. We'll have to check in on him.
Yeah, we'll check those facts. Yeah. But,
He'll tell us.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes I'm sure you might feel the same way about certain things. Like if someone you have a relationship with, their favorite of something is this, like you tend to hold it in a higher regard than you typically would. So I do that with things like Moonraker and even Man with the Golden Gun. So
why do you do that with?
With Moonraker? Yeah. That's my dad's favorite.
Well, that makes me happy. Yeah. That's great.
You know, he's like, you know, you talk to my father and you talk about James Bond. He doesn't really care for the Daniel Craig era of Bond. He hasn't seen them all, but, you know, they're a little heavier. Yeah. They're a little more serious. They're a little more... especially the later ones, more relationship based. Mm-hmm. And he'll say, you can hear him saying this, but like, give me fun. Yeah. Give me Moonraker. Yeah. You know, that's awesome. That's what he would want.
That's great. I mean, here's the thing, Man with the Golden Gun is just so much fun to watch. It really is. It's a good watch. There are certain things that, like, I'll be honest, the Bond girls, I'm not impressed. Really not impressed, but I really like Christopher Lee, really like Nick Knack. Roger Moore, that was the movie that made me like have faith in him. You know what I mean? I was like, okay, cool. Like, I see you as Bond and not just some, like, I don't know, guy who, like, jumps into the gun barrel. And
which he never does.
Which he doesn't. Again, see, I'm just making up rumors here.
I feel he's stronger as a presence and a performance in Live and Let Die, his previous outing. This one, I felt like, no fault of his own, really, but they were dabbling with the character a bit more.
I really like the one-liners.
Yeah.
He's so good at those. Mm-hmm. It just comes out so naturally. He's not like this dark presence. He's just got such a lightness to him. And just his posture, the way he walks, is like bell-bottom slacks, you know, whatever you want to call that. Mm-hmm. He really owns the character in such a unique way. And I'm giving him credit on that.
I was going to say, are you sure you don't like him?
I know, right? It's crazy. But this movie, I remember the first time we saw it, I was like, okay, I think I like Roger Moore a little bit more.
Yeah,
like,
if he was sitting across from you and he's like, so you don't like me? And he raised one arched eyebrow.
That's right, and then he came at me with a toothbrush kiss and be like, get over here. Yeah. I'm sorry. But maybe present day I might resist, but, you know.
I'm sure he would because, you know, he's passed away.
Yeah, that's right. I don't really like that. Full disclosure. But here's, what was I going to say? I don't remember. Oh, whatever.
We were talking about the Bond girls for a second there. And
real quick, wait.
Yeah, sure.
Because what I was going to, actually, it's not important, but I'm still going to say because I have to. I'm sorry. The thing is, when the first Roger Moore, maybe he is better in Live and Let Die. I don't know because I had such clouded judgment during that movie. So maybe upon rewatching it, I would say, oh, what was I thinking? Of course, Roger Moore's good. But this movie is really what kind of like, change my like I swayed a little bit more towards I like Roger Moore.
I'm sure it's because you had more fun watching this, so you're like, I'm having a bad time. That makes me like this more. Like that doesn't make any sense, unless you know. Well, maybe.
I mean, for some people, hey, you know, we're not here to judge.
Are you some kind of sadist? Yeah. but you know, the Bond girls. There are two in particular. Both Swedish women.
Yeah.
Maude Adams and Britt Ekland playing. What's her name? Andrea Anders and
Goodnight.
Mary Goodnight. And I'll tell you what, for the main Bond girl of Mary Goodnight, one of my least favorite Bond girls, I appreciate how, like, I don't know. I don't even know what I appreciate because she's all but useless.
I was gonna say, like, as if a character. You took her out of every single scene, it would be the same movie.
No, it wouldn't. You know really? Why? Because if you took her out of every single scene, Bond would have saved the day.
Yeah, would have been better.
And he wouldn't have had to go to that island and rescue her.
Because he still had sex despite her presence.
Hell
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, he still got it, and she was waiting in the closet. That's bad, man.
I think we call that a cucking.
Is that what that's called?
I think so. Yeah. Well, sort of.
Okay.
having sexual relations while someone else watches, and that person is the cuck. But yeah.
Sorry, that got kind of dark there. Or not dark.
It
but
sounds
like
it is.
This seems too dirty for this.
I will look up to see if that's even inappropriate. Yeah. Like, is that too crass
like
to say?
A cucking expert out there was like, well, actually. Yeah. Well, anyways.
Apparently, Mary Goodnight is an expert.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm getting at is, as a character, she is super thirsty. Thirstiest of all the Bond girls.
Mm-hmm.
Very quick to forgive if it means a good shagging. From Bond. You know, it's like, I'm mad at you. And then the second later, she's like, I'm weak.
Right, because he was like, you'll get your turn. And she was like, wow, really? Like, you dumb bitch.
Many times, like, it'll be your turn soon, I promise. With, like, a cigar in his mouth.
Yeah, and he puts it under her eye. And she's like, wow, I'm so lucky.
Yeah, and then the whole, like, you know, they... A big part of this plot is the Solex? Solex agitator.
Oh, yeah.
Is this it's good Solex. Memory. I want to say solar plex.
I would have said the, solar like, plex? The Solex. Clear Game Boy that they had passing around.
They got that clear Game Boy, or that clear pack of cigarettes. And the Solex agitator, which is like this energy honing device, which is needed to gather the energy of the sun and put it, convert it into pure raw energy.
Purple energy, to be specific.
I don't even know if it's that. It's invisible energy.
It was purple.
I say invisible because Scaramanga, like, is able to use this device to, like, transfer energy into this big ray gun, and he blows up Bond's airplane. You remember that? But when he shoots it, no laser beam comes out, and I found out it's because there was no budget to even put in a laser beam. Yeah, that's why.
They were just like, yeah, skip it.
Yeah, it's energy waves.
Yeah, change their writing a little. The writers are like tearing up their scripts, breaking their clipboards.
It was just pretend. But yeah, because of this device, you know, that's Scaramanga's like real plot is to like use this energy device. Mary Goodnight has it, and all she needed to do was run away, and said she trails Nick Knack and thinks she's going to, you know, help save the day too.
And I've never seen somebody put a tracking device slower on a vehicle. Yeah. Usually you put it like, or in movies at least, you know, where the wheel is, well, you put it there. Like you go thunk on the like, I don't know, cars, the wheel cap, whatever you want to call
sure,
it.
Sure, the hubcap.
But she was just like, Jimmy, 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 open slowly, just enough for my body to fit. And then she puts it in there and slowly, slowly, slowly. And then she gets pushed in like a dumb bitch, you know? That's not her fault.
Do you think Scaramanga, you know, when he pushes her in, shuts the door, surrounded by people, do you think everyone was like, good job? Like, good for you.
You know what? If you I saw her. Somebody jimmying somebody's trunk open, I'd be like, that's illegal. Like, you can't do that. Then if they got pushed in, I would be like, I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then
I'm not a good Samaritan. I mind my business.
And the whole finale, you know, she's just running around in her skimpy bikini and
we're so mean to her.
Oh, well, you know,
it's true. I'm on your side.
This is why she's one of my least favorites, to be honest. You know, she pushes that henchman into the big vat, you know, doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. Turns out she made another mistake.
Yeah.
Later on, she bumps the button with her butt, does another mistake. She's just like, she's like Willie Scott in Temple of Doom. Always just kind of in the way. But
that joke killed with people who got it.
Yeah, that's right. But there's, I don't know, like as I've gotten older, there's some fun to be had with her character. Yes, yes, like, I know she's going to make all these mistakes. Therefore, I can kind of chuckle at it. And through that chuckle, there's, like, a charm to it. You know what I mean?
And Bond is always on top of it. You know, it's like when a kid's cleaning up, quote unquote, and they drop a bunch of shit in the process and the parent's going to clean it up. You know, well, okay, you should teach your kid how to clean up after themselves. But more often than not, you know, you got the responsible parent picking up after him and then it gets done. So that's how Bond is. He just makes sure that, sorry, my face got away from the mic real quick.
You're good.
But he always fixes it. He does find a way to solve the problem, and there's, you have faith in that. You're not like, oh no, what's Roger Moore gonna do? Like, you know he'll get it. So it's like high stakes and annoying stakes, but we know Bond's gonna figure it out. I love the vats. I love a good vat. When there's like a bad guy with a vat of something, I don't care what it is, that's good. That's good stuff.
Scaramanga didn't know either. You know, science was never my strong suit.
They told me I needed this. Like, okay. Yeah. Sure, you know what you're doing? Like,
so yeah, you know, the other Bond girl, Andrea Anders, who's played by Maude Adams. I really like her character. Like, this is like a poor, suffering human of a character. You know, she's trapped, essentially. She is the mistress of Scaramanga, and she is afraid for her life and doesn't want to be with this villain anymore. So she, you find out, reaches out to Bond by framing Scaramanga, essentially. Framing him as in, like, I have my target, my assassination target as James Bond. That doesn't turn out to be the case, really. Miss Anders is really trying to get Bond to save her from Scaramanga.
Yeah.
Like, help me. And even Bond's like, be quiet, you.
Let me twist your arm.
Yeah.
That scene, real quick, that did not, that rubbed me the wrong way.
Of course. Yeah.
Well, for the thing is, she was not convincing.
You don't think she was convincing?
I don't know. In that moment where he's like twisting her arm, she's like, I'm like, what the, what can you just?
I disagree.
I'm like, ugh, you know, I'm like, dude, it hurts. Like, it's not like a progressive, like, little ouches here and there. I don't know. There's just something about it that was a little too, well, unconvincing, I guess. I don't know. I didn't like that.
The only thing unconvincing to me in that scene is Roger Moore being like, I'll break it if you still tell me.
That's true. No, that whole dynamic was terrible. But that was the only part I didn't like about her. Like, that was really the only scene that I was like, you guys should have done one more rehearsal. Just one more and then action. But that wasn't in the budget, apparently. So, but no, I thought her death was very interesting. Sorry, not to jump ahead or cut you off. Sorry, as I do. Sorry.
Yeah. But yeah, like, I disagree. I think she is, I think that portrayal is very good in that scene. I don't like that scene, you know, overall. Mm-hmm. But, you know, something else I noticed about her in particular, and not even her, her character, the music that played when she was on, it's very, like, sad music.
Oh.
And it just makes you really feel for this person in hindsight, because she is kind of has a miserable life. Mm-hmm. She reaches out for help. And then she dies. Well, she has sex with Bond and then dies.
And then she dies.
A mistress cannot have two masters, is what Scaramanga says. You're right. Like, that, her death scene is very interesting. It's almost haunting, because she's sitting there almost like, you know, just like in the zone watching this Muay Thai boxing, or it wasn't even Muay Thai, but some kind of
boxing,
kickboxing. Mm-hmm. Event. And
just the look in her eyes, and like, Bond, the thing is that it's because Bond didn't just find her dead, he's like talking to her and waiting for a response.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that, or I think it's a very effective method, but it brings me down. It doesn't, it has like a very, it's very effective, it's morose, it's dark, it's like,
yep.
Like, I'm like, Mom, or it's like in The Lion King, when he's like, Dad, and he's like not waking up.
Perfect, just like The Lion King.
But you know what I mean, it's a similar feeling where like, you're like, oh, dude, they're not waking up, oh, but you don't know this yet, oh my God, you're about to find out, and then they do. Like, that's kind of, like the, you know, you probably know she's dead before Bond does, and it's like, it's sad, it's effective.
And, you know, like, it's almost Bond's fault that she's technically it's,
oh yeah,
technically it's for her own, through her own doings that it got to that point, kind of deal.
The circumstances more than anything.
That's right.
I'm smart.
But it leads to, you know, a very great confrontation between Bond finally being face-to-face with Scaramanga.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets to kind of explain his backstory, all the while Bond sees a Solex agitator that, and I can't say her damn name, Andrea Anders, was bringing to him. It's on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a nice little tense scene. Scaramanga's talking about his upbringing, and Nick Knack has a pistol and a bag of peanuts on him.
Well, what do they think of next?
Yeah. So it's a good scene, and Mary Goodnight messes mm-hmm. it all up.
And honestly, that scene, though, brings us to another thing that I think is one of your favorite aspects of the Bond franchise, when he picks up the teleschmunker, or whatever you call it, and then he puts it in the tray of peanuts, and it's revealed that the guy holding the peanuts mm-hmm. is his ally.
Yeah.
So what do you I forget his name, but what do you think of his
Bond
ally?
I also don't remember his name. He's all right, you know, mm-hmm. you know, he's no Tiger Tanaka. He's not a very memorable Bond ally, to be honest. If anything, he kind of makes me mad. At one point in time, earlier in the film, there's a martial arts school. And, oh, yeah. you know, take Mr. Bond to school. And, you know, the reason they did that is because at this time in the early 70s, martial arts films were really taken off.
That's right.
So it was like the popular, you'll notice that throughout the Bond series, especially like the early to mid ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what was the big thing? Oh, martial arts films, we're going to incorporate that. Star Wars, we're going to take Bond to space.
Just about to say Moonraker was a victim of that circumstance.
Certainly, so. Certainly. And this one was one of those. And so there's martial arts and Bond's ally, we can't remember his name. He has two nieces that also go to a karate school mm-hmm. and there's that martial arts fight. And then when they're escaping, they all get in the car. Bond's like making sure the nieces get in, and then he goes around to the other side, and the dude just takes off.
Yeah, he doesn't, like, one guy who needs to make sure is in the car is not in the car.
Yeah, they don't stop. They don't turn around. Like, what do you think those nieces were saying?
But if
like,
it weren't
stop,
for that,
back.
If it weren't for that, we would have never had our beloved, JW?
Sheriff J.W. Pepper.
We would have never seen him if it weren't for that.
Yeah.
So he really is the hero of the day.
That's right. You know, I'm assuming he was so popular in the previous film, they're like, let's bring him back in this one. I'm very thankful for that. He should have been in all of Roger Moore's outings.
He should have been Bond. That was a great cameo.
It is good. Mm-hmm. It is good. I really enjoy it. I think it's kind of funny. He's on vacation with his wife. And the way he gets incorporated into the adventure, really, is he's test driving a car. He's at a car dealership in Thailand.
It's such an American tourist thing.
Yeah.
And I love that. It's such a gimmick.
You think so?
Oh, it is. I mean, here's the thing. You get any kind of, like, stereotypical American tourist, whatever you want to do that, they go to McDonald's. They go to, like, you know, the Japanese Walmart. You know what I mean? Like, they'll be like, oh, wait, I know this, you know? And that's just the stereotypical tourist. And of course, J.W. Pepa's going to be that guy.
Yep.
It's great. He's in a car dealership. Like, what's he doing there? But he just wants to, because that's, like, what's comforting to him, and that's the stereotype. I love that.
I like your explanation more than mine. I was like, how are we going to incorporate him in this car chase? Aha. You know,
like, he's just in the car already.
Yeah. It would have been interesting if, like, Bond needed to apprehend a vehicle and he did just hailing one in the street mm-hmm. and it was J.W. Pepper's car or something.
Oh, that would have been fun. But that's the thing, too, is, like, I like how him and his wife, you know, they're on this, like, boat, and there's this little boy who's like, elephant, pretty lady, haha, for you, 20 blah, blah, blahs, whatever. And then they get off the boat, and then she's like, I simply need one of these elephants. And that got a giggle out of me. I thought that was fun.
Yeah.
Got a kick out of that. And then he falls into the water. That was great.
You know, Roger Moore, he's an ambassador of UNICEF, and he felt pretty guilty about shoving that little boy in the water and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he felt pretty guilty about that. And what else did he... around that boating scene, he was told not to go in the water, and he did out of spite. He just, like, jumped in. And then he did by accident a second time. They're going around a bend, and he just fell in the water. And he opened his eyes, and he saw a lot of dead bodies in the water. He's like, oh, this is where they bury some of their people, or apparently, or maybe it was like a, you know, a
he's like, don't fall in the water, don't fall in the water. I was right, like, why? Right. Just don't do it. Just don't do it.
Yeah, that's
wow.
Why.
Oh man. And then he felt bad for the little kid, and then he made him polish his shoes later. You know,
probably.
He's like, attaboy.
I should become an ambassador for UNICEF.
God, I was surprised that he pushed him. I'm like, you're James Bond.
Kid wanted 20 grand. Get the hell out of here. But yeah, you know, they have this fun boat chase. You have to compare it to the previous film, which also had a boat chase, in Live and Let Die, which is much, 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 much better. Mm. Personally.
Doesn't the boat go on land?
No, that's in Moonraker. I think what you're thinking of, there is a boat that like ramps up onto the road and then goes
that's
back in the
I'm
water.
Thinking of,
that's
yeah.
Live and Let Die.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Sure.
Moonraker has a boat on the Jesus. I can't wait for that movie. Okay. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah. You know, good action scenes throughout this mm-hmm. movie. This film has, speaking of J.W. Pepper and being in an apprehended vehicle, has one of the most impressive car stunts I've ever seen.
That is ruined. Sorry, I bet you were going to say that.
Well, no, I'm glad you took it, because, yeah, it is absolutely ruined by a good old slide whistle. You know, they do this incredible corkscrew jump that someone actually did, you know? Like, a stunt person actually accomplished this crazy stunt, and Guy Hamilton, he said it's one of his biggest regrets, is putting in that slide whistle, because he felt audiences wouldn't believe that stunt was like real. So he's like, I'm just going to like enforce like how silly it is, how unbelievable it is.
Which honestly, like a clown horn would have been more, like that would have been more effective than like, this isn't the Jetsons. Like, it was just so out of place. I got really mad there, but it was so impressive. It would have been so much more effective if it was just quiet, uh-huh. and you're like on the edge of your seat. And
you know,
yeah, no.
Here's my dilemma. Because imagine two scenarios: the one we get where, you know, does the jump and then carries on, or does the jump complete silence, and upon landing, that would be really cool and like a crowd cheering moment.
Yeah.
But, you know, the slide whistle bit, it's like a part of history.
It's
like
iconic.
It would, the movie would feel so different without it. Even like if a fan went back now and edited out the slide whistle, did what I just described, with the Bond theme kicking in right at the landing. It would feel wrong.
No, I think the movie would be better without it. I stand by that. I planted my flag. There's like just, it's a white flag with like a big crossed out slide whistle. Like, no,
I'm not disagreeing that it would.
If you, there was a re-release, no, I'm going to finish my point here. Here's the thing. If there was a re-release of that movie in theaters and like, ooh, some things have been edited just a little bit, and that wasn't in there, like as soon, if they did exactly what you just described, silence, and then burr, 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 like brassy, I bet the crowd would be cheering. They would be cheering.
Was that the Incredibles theme?
It was the, I've been doing that. I'm like, man, I can't wait for this Bond thing. And I'm like, burr, 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 and I'm like, ah, shit, that's the wrong thing. Sorry. I have to watch my language. But I think the crowd would be cheering. I think they would be so happy about that.
I'm not disagreeing with you that it would make it a better movie.
Just said it wouldn't be.
It wouldn't be the same. It would feel wrong. It would feel wrong.
I disagree, but you. Of course, I see what you're saying.
I think I'm. Yeah. I think I'm nostalgic for it. You know what I'm saying? I'm nostalgic for that. I'm nostalgic for J.W. Pepper.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he's very abrasive and racist.
Yeah. And also, if you don't know who he is.
Yeah.
And you're just watching this movie. What was he in? Who's in Live and Let Die?
Yeah.
I knew who he was because we had watched that movie, and I was a little bit like, whoa, who is this person? But you know who he is. If you don't know who he is, it just makes the whole movie so wacky.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's like, because technically you could have this whole scene without him, 100%. Because it's not like he brings the car to Bond. Bond just gets in the car that he happens to be in. In? Yes. End of sentence. So, I don't know. But, yeah. I don't, I'm, yeah.
I know you. Oh, no. Is Sheriff J.W. Pepper a fan favorite or a crowd favorite?
What?
It's like, does he belong to the nostalgic or can newcomers enjoy this character?
Oh, he's a fan favorite. I mean, okay, like, you can get a kick out of him, but I think he's a fan favorite. Like, and you could, like, a newcomer could be like, who the hell is this guy? But I don't think, I think he is a fan favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think they brought him back, because, actually, I don't know.
Especially at the time.
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know. What do you think?
I think at the time he was a crowd favorite. Mm. I think, like, for newcomers such as yourself, he's very spicy.
Yeah, he stands out.
He does.
He stands out for sure. That's a good thing.
He's the I don't know, if you're having a dinner party, this is going to sound like a Margot.
Thank you.
What do you call it?
You have the floor. I'll tell you if it's accurate.
analogy. It's like you're having a fancy dinner party. There's filet mignon. There's caviar. Then, hey, someone brings some cheeseburgers.
Some meatloaf.
Some meatloaf.
Homemade meatloaf. You're almost there.
Margot analogies me.
Yeah, I will forever be the sensei on that one.
Yeah, bring some meatloaf. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Like, yeah, no, I get
here's
that.
Here's the meatloaf. That'll haul your ass. But
he is the meatloaf of that movie. Like, you like meatloaf? Meatloaf's good. You know. But you know what meatloaf is. It's a loaf of meat. You know? Like, that's all you got to say about that.
Sheriff J.W. Pepper, a loaf of meat. What a man.
That's good. That's good. No, that's a really good point.
Speaking of what a man, Scaramanga.
Yeah, let's touch on that more.
Yeah, so a very great villain, a classic Bond villain. Fun factoid, Christopher Lee is the cousin of Ian Fleming. And Ian Fleming wanted Christopher Lee to play Dr. No originally in the 1962 movie.
Oh, wow.
At the time, Christopher Lee passed on it. Because he, at the time, was doing these Dracula movies. Gotcha. And was doing a lot of acting with not a lot of dialogue. And Dr. No is no different. And he wanted more for his career at that point in time.
Yeah.
If I'm remembering that correctly. But
that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Hey, but I'm glad that he did Scaramanga, because if he did Dr. No, he wouldn't have been able to do that. And I thought he was very convincing.
Potentially. You know, this Bond franchise, they bring back actors.
Yeah, they kind of recycle.
The actress who plays Andrea Anders comes back almost a decade later and is Octopussy.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Is she the one in the interview who was like, he's really kind of...
Yeah.
Hard on these women.
Yeah.
Just smacks them.
Yeah, she was not too keen on her time as Bond girl.
Yeah.
From
fair.
What we hear in interviews and things like that.
Honestly.
Appreciative,
fair point.
But you know.
Yeah.
Maybe not a fan of some things. But
gross.
I mean, who is it? We just talked about him in GoldenEye. I'm having trouble remembering his name right now, but he played Wade.
He's also
a Bond ally. He's one of the main Bond villains in Living Daylights. Charles Gray, who played Henderson in Live and Let Die, is Blofeld in Diamonds Are Forever.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know?
Oh, so they just don't care. They're just like, whatever fits.
Yeah. They'll bring him back. No problem.
Yeah.
Who knows? He could have came back.
That's true. He could have been every Bond villain. That would have been cool if they decided... Every Bond villain is just played by the same guy. Yeah, no, that would have been terrible. Never mind. I take it back.
So, like I was saying in the beginning, Man with Golden Gun was almost the last Bond film. Maybe because of thoughts like that. Like, same actor. Every
time. All of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrible.
James Bond and the Multiverse of Madness.
Maybe. That's some fan fiction right there.
So, you know what also bothered me about this movie a bit is everyone is just mad at Bond from the get-go. Like, he just shows up and they're like, damn you, 007.
Like, Krusty M.
Yeah, Krusty M. All the other gentlemen in the room are just annoyed with him. Q's always annoyed with him.
Yeah.
Moneypenny is annoyed with him. Everyone's annoyed.
That's true. But there's still that. Oh, Moneypenny. Just, she does it better than anyone else.
It's like, oh, I'm sorry, sir. I was doing my job and someone made a mistake, which caused me to make a mistake also. It's like, I wish Scaramanga had put a bullet in you, 007.
Did he say that?
Yes, he does.
That's so bad. Wow.
Like, oh, jeez, that's a little harsh. Oh, that's what I think that's what I'm getting at. There was a little harsh on
If I hired
James.
Someone and gave him a license to kill, shenanigans would ensue. Like, I don't know why. They're like, how did this happen? I'm like, this is a whole spy agency. What do you think's going to happen? Anyway, so I'm an expert and they're not, obviously. So. Yeah.
But, you know, this is one of the few Bond novels I read, mm-hmm. The Man with the Golden Gun. And it was Ian Fleming's last book that he wrote of the James Bond series. He died before he got to properly finish it. He wrote essentially a draft, but it's his shortest book, I believe. It's certainly unpolished. It didn't get enough refinements, and he was in very, very, very poor health while writing it.
Mm-hmm.
So in comparison to some of the other books I've read, it's not the best. It just feels like incomplete. It feels like it's missing the fluff, you know what I mean? Like
for
the details.
Context for me, when did he die?
That's a great question. 65.
Okay, so he didn't get to see this movie be made.
No.
Okay, he's only been around for Dr. No and...
I think he might have passed, or he saw Goldfinger, I believe.
Okay.
Or he either saw Goldfinger or passed away before Goldfinger came out, but I think he got to see Goldfinger.
Okay.
So 1964.
Gosh. Oh, wow. Okay, for sure. And then second question, book versus movie. Are they similar? Where are the differences?
No, that's what I was getting at, too, mm-hmm. is not even close. Not even close.
Oh, wow.
So, if you recall, in You Only Live Twice, and You Only Live Twice, Bond, I mentioned in the book, you know, loses his memory and finds this newspaper that says Russia, and he's like, something is calling me. I need to leave mm-hmm. and find my memories. This movie picks up. This book picks up right after that, well, years later, essentially, but story-wise, right after that. And it's Bond coming back to MI6. Everyone at MI6 believes Bond to be dead, but he's passing all the clearances, he's passing all the tests and all the information needed, and he's being passed along to M. And they finally meet, Bond and M, for like a debriefing, like, where have you been? And Bond pulls out a gun and goes to assassinate M. But M pulls up this like glass shield. He kind of anticipated it. And turns out Bond was apprehended by the Russians and brainwashed in order to assassinate M.
Whoa.
That could have been a whole story right there. They could have stretched that out. That's like the first chapter.
Oh, wow. Okay, for sure. So there's not even... Wow. Jump right into it. Uh-huh. So is it pretty much just them trying to rehabilitate Bond, or
very briefly, M's like, no, don't press charges. He just needs a good mission to shake him up a bit, get him back, get his memories back. They basically do what's the word, rehabilitate him fairly quickly, and he gets his memories back and such. And but
did they throw the best talent show the world has ever seen?
That's how,
that how they got him back.
They reenacted all his adventures with puppets, and he's like, I remember. So, Bond needs put on this mission. Well,
that's good.
Well, this man named, what's his name? It is like Scaramanga. It's like Francisco, like two pistols Scaramanga or something. I don't know. Pistol Pete Scaramanga.
Cool hand Scaramanga.
Basically, who is an assassin, and he does, you know, call out James Bond, I'm going to assassinate you. Well, Bond gets sent on this mission to stop this, you know, this buddy guy, and you know, I think that's how it goes. I'm my memory's a little fuzzy on it. I didn't
Guy wasn't word for word.
I should have refreshed it in my memory. I've read this a couple years ago, but the interesting part is Bond travels to said location where Scaramanga is, meets Scaramanga, essentially kind of befriends him, mm-hmm. and becomes Scaramanga's secretary. And Scaramanga's doing all these deals with like these like mafia people, these people of power, and he's got this plot where he's gonna like ride this train and steal all this money or something like that. I might be mixing up Goldfinger's book.
It's also a western.
Kinda, yeah. And but yeah, he's like really trying to kill Bond and stuff like that. And Mary Goodnight is in it. She was in a few books prior to this. She is Bond's secretary too.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Moneypenny is M's secretary. Mm-hmm. Mary Goodnight is Bond's secretary.
Hmm.
And there's always this unsaid thing between them that they kind of, you know, get into more in this book. And this is where it's like a western. And this is why I remember the train. Scaramanga captures Mary Goodnight, ties her up to the train tracks. Is going to run her over. The CIA...
pulls his mask off. It's Vince McMahon.
It was me, Austin. Yeah, so Felix is in this. CIA is on Scaramanga too, and they, like, Felix rigs this train to blow, so it will explode and derail and stop Scaramanga and save Mary Goodnight and all that jazz.
Wow.
And they do have a standoff, Bond and Scaramanga, but this is after the train explosion, and Scaramanga is, like, gravely injured. He's going to die anyway. So they have, like, a very limp, like, shoot-off, sort of. But it is a very good scene in the book. Scaramanga is, like, bleeding to death. But he, before he gets shot by Bond, is, like, begging, like, let me save my prayers and get right with God first. And Bond's like, have it your way. And the whole time he's, like, saying this prayer, he's, like, inching close to a gun. And then he, like, you know, they both, like, turn and pop each other. And Bond obviously wins that shootout. And then he rides off with Mary Goodnight and beds her, and the book ends.
You know, I'm happy with the movie that we got.
Yeah, in comparison, mm-hmm. the plot is stronger overall. Like I said, Ian Fleming was in very poor health while writing it, and he didn't get to fully complete it. There's rumors that he didn't even finish it, and other people, like, cleaned it up, like, and wrapped it up for him, and didn't have all the passes of, like, you know, like... Mm. He's famous for just writing. Like, he would write and not edit a thing, and he would not even look back on his writing until, like, either the next day or when the book was finished or whatever, and just make changes from there, or make updates or tweak this or that, and, you know, make the story stronger. But being in poor health, maybe he wasn't in the right state of mind to. He himself was like, I'm losing my edge writing these Bond stories. So this was going to be his last one regardless. He has said that previously and kept writing and kept writing. But
I apologize too, because as you're telling me this, I'm like, oh, like, nothing devalues a significant event. Like, oh, yeah. Hitler did that? Like, you know, it's just like, no, you don't.
I do recommend the audiobook of The Man with the Golden Gun, because it is narrated by Kenneth Branagh.
That's amazing. Just for that, yeah. Go for it. Oh, what was I going to bring up? Scaramanga. Oh, you know what we unintentionally did is, you said you only live twice, and Man with the Golden Gun, they're like back to back. Or they're that's the sequel to You Only Live Twice. We did that, technically.
We did. And I wonder, like, we chose this one. I was like, how about this? How about that?
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to do a Roger Moore movie. And I'm like, how about this one? I wonder if subconsciously I knew that.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't.
You're just so good.
Just too good. But.
Real quick. Sure. Tell me about the ending. Like, how did you feel about
this movie's ending?
Mm-hmm.
How does this movie end? Oh.
Yeah, spooky.
I love the finale. I love the standoff shootout. It's one of my favorites, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But after Scaramanga does get shot and die, I lose a bit of interest. Yeah, they're trying to get the Solex agitator. Stop, you know, this energy thing from being absorbed and, you know, just retrieve it back to bring back to the government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the islands exploding and things like that. Like, yeah, it's a big exciting explosion kind of deal. But, like, the interest for me goes away, because here was the villain. the villain is defeated. And it would have been maybe more interesting if that all was happening while Bond and Scaramanga were, like, looking for each other. Mm-hmm. But that also kills the tension of, like, you know, Bond's almost being hunted by Scaramanga. So it's tough to say. It's not my favorite ending. It was, to a point. And then it just keeps going, you know? And then they're on the boat, and then Nick Knack is there. And it's funny, you know? It's a little silly bit. I like it because you hear Nick Knack's theme a lot, which I pointed out to you I really like. It's like, I can't hum it too well, but it's like, bum, 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 bum.
It's eerie.
Bum, 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 bum. I've always liked that. But yeah, it is silly. I mean, he like puts Nick Knack in a suitcase and carries him to who knows where, and you find out he puts him in a little basket.
Works. That's the worst part. The suitcase, like, works. It wasn't like he tried and he was like, ah, damn it, okay. Like, that would have been funny. Like, it works. Not it works as in it's effective. Like, he captures him in the suitcase. Like, that was a mouse trap. He's like, haha, gotcha.
Yeah.
I agree with you. It drags on.
It does a bit, and like, it drags on for... Yes, it wraps up the plot, I suppose, but then it keeps going even beyond that for laughs and stuff like that. Like, it could have, but you needed to figure, at least there was a resolution. There was a resolution of the plot. There was a resolution of, like, Nick Knack, for example, because, like, last time you see him, he's, like, working the control panel, the fun house, and then the island explodes. So we could have been left to assume that he died or something on the island, but I personally like that he doesn't die, and he probably gets apprehended and, you know, whatever.
I kind of would have liked it if he got away.
I would have rather that.
I would have liked that. Like, you know, you don't even see him trying to kill Bond. Like, he just, like, he gets, like, on a rowboat or something. So, you know, it's like anything could happen on a rowboat. Like, or something. Like, yeah, like, he got away somehow. Maybe not in the most certain, like, safe way, I guess, but he did get away.
I'm going to rewrite it now when Bond comes downstairs and she's like, who's steering the ship? He's like, autopilot. It's George, the autopilot. What if it was Nick Knack, actually?
Ooh, like, and like a mustache and like a fake nose or something. Like, fake glasses.
And stilts. Like, oh, hello, George. Get us to London, England.
Oh, God. He's like, oui, Monsieur Bond.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to make this about me real quick. So you remember how I said I have a story about the funhouse?
Sure.
Because the funhouse thing was very effective to me. I really, really did like it. Real quick, before I make it about myself, what did you think of the funhouse?
I've said ad nauseum that I love it.
Okay, cool. All right, my turn. Sorry. So, okay, the funhouse thing was terrifying to me because, like, I did have a really bad experience in, like, one of those, like, mirror mazes funhouse things back in Switzerland. I was with my sisters and my dad, and we went into this funhouse, and there was the mirror maze, and I got lost. And I was trying to find... I could hear Marie's voice, my sister, and she was calling out, and I was like, we're looking for the exit. And she's like, this way, no, this way. And I was like, oh, no, Marie, I found it. And I thought I saw the hallway. And I just, you know what you don't do in a mirror maze is you sprint, but I did. So I sprinted. I'm maybe like 10 years old at this point. Sprinted and beeline for that exit. And I just, poof, right into the mirror. And I was just so discombobulated. I was like, what? And a family, like, walks up by me, and because they're Swiss, they're not nice, and they're just, in French, they're like, why did you run? And I was like, I don't know you people, like, and it was just a very, very eerie moment, because then I got lost, and I couldn't find my family, and I'm just running around, and I'm looking at myself, and I see myself in all these different angles, I'm like, and it, like, it was just a bad experience.
So when Bond is running around, and Scaramanga's funhouse, you're like, slow down.
No, I was like, faster, faster. I just wanted to tell my story.
Please do. And I'm going to ask you to continue your own story in a sense. This film, The Man with the Golden Gun, how did you feel of it, but is this the kind of movie that should stay with the nostalgic, or could newcomers come and enjoy this movie despite its silliness, despite some of the spicier elements?
Embrace it wholeheartedly. There's just, for me, just enough that I believe this is for the nostalgics. It's a good movie. I wouldn't say it's a novice view.
Yep.
How about yourself?
I'm going to have to agree with you. Mm-hmm. I've said, you know, I really enjoy this film. It might be in my top 10. I'd have to review that. It's probably not, but I do really enjoy this film. I frequent it a lot. There's a lot of cozy elements of it for me, especially with Scaramanga's Island. The Golden Gun is an iconic weapon in cinema, but also in video games.
Mm-hmm.
So for that aspect, I could see, you know, maybe checking this out if you're big on video games. There's some classic things that have been spoofed in this movie. And I said previously, like, oh, Austin Powers spoofs, or a lot of movies spoof You Only Live Twice, so maybe you should check it out for a historical aspect. This one, not so much. This one is definitely on the sillier side of James Bond. The more fun side of James Bond. Has a great villain.
Mm-hmm.
So for, like, those kinds of reasons, the Bond tropes, as you said, it does have it all, essentially. I love it, but I can't ignore that it is certainly for the nostalgic. It's a fan favorite, but a lot of fans even rank it pretty low, usually. But yeah, I love it, but I agree with you. It is for the nostalgic.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So would you say the verdict is in?
The verdict is in. Thank you. I was like, we're missing something.
That does it then. Yeah. The verdict is in. It is
for the nostalgic.
Indeed.
Doesn't matter whatever anybody else says. We are right. End of story.
Yeah, we've squeezed all we can out of The Man with the Golden Gun.
Nice.
And yeah, that will wrap it up for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm August.
I'm Margot. But first, before we do you can find us on Instagram at A Good Squeeze Pod, where we'll send updates about the episodes, and you can find some cool art as well. But yeah, now.
Yeah, and if you liked what you heard, you can find our other episodes, enjoy those as well, on wherever you find your podcasts. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're there.
And join us every other Thursday, as it seems.
Absolutely. Hey, Margo, I'm August.
Hey, August, I'm Margo.
This was A Good Squeeze.